This is an adult podcast made for adults by adults. Welcome to Fake Film Fans' Christmas episode. So get ready, because this is going to be the most fucking positive Christmas episode you're ever going to listen to. So much excitement, so much love for Christmas. Might even cry with how exciting it all is, how much Santa Claus there's going to be. You're not going to cry because of how sad and lonely this episode is. Yep, we're changing this little beginning bit just a little bit, because I want to thank Posher, which is the band that creates all the music for this podcast, every episode. So I'm just going to make a reference to them from now on, right when we get into the music. Welcome to Fake Film Fans, a film podcast for thoughtful degenerates. Yeah, I'm Walter, and there is something that's kind of up with this podcast today, right? Something is a little wrong here. Something's up. That's right, this is going to be Fake Film Fans' first solo podcast, which is incredibly sad. I know, if I was you, I'd be turning off this podcast, but please stay. Which is, I guess, some Jeff Bush energy. But it's okay. I'm desperate. This is going to be a great podcast. Don't worry, guys. I'm not fucking panicking. I'm not worried that my shitty humor is going to fuck me up. I'm not worried about not knowing how to use the correct words and having someone to correct me. So my little degens, this is going to be the best fucking episode. When I first was thinking about doing this podcast, I was planning to do it with a film buff, and then Suede comes in. How do I say this? He fucking puts his input into the podcast, completely throws the podcast to another direction. Now we're in the business of adapting, and I just gotta deal with it. So now we gotta go back to the roots, the fucking nice watery roots, you know, where I just get to be pretentious. This is gonna be the best episode, my little degens. Cue Suede not calling me out for calling you guys that. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe actually a lonely episode. But hey, we can be lonely together on Christmas, which is the best day to be lonely. And this is an intentional transition because, you know, it is kind of awkward trying to look at my notes and talk to you guys. I actually am not so used to doing this. I feel like I'm being a little robotic instead of talking more naturally. So maybe I'll just stop looking at my notes so much and just fucking go with the flow. What I want to say is this lonely thing was a transition setup. And then it looked cheesy when I was looking at my notes. So I was like, God damn, I gotta call myself out for that. Initially, when we were planning this episode, so Suede's on like medical leave. I think he'll be back next episode, but not 100% sure. If you do want to give him wishes, or if you want to give him a Christmas present, let's put it this way. If you want to give him a fucking Christmas present, do it. Send him some wishes on our Twitter. Even rate us 5 stars and give us a reveal. That is like the perfect Christmas gift Suede wants. He doesn't want anything else except nice words on Twitter and ratings, because he is a fucking capitalist slut. I don't know. Capitalism? I don't know what it is. Cheese. That's what he loves saying. Give him the cheese. That is his Christmas wish. He doesn't need anything else. And I know Suede usually doesn't like it when I fucking ask for people to give me ratings before the podcast starts. But it is my rules. My time to shine. Booyah. Hashtag YoPo. Sorry, guys. I'm trying to work myself up. Otherwise, we're just going to have a really lonely podcast, which I think some people think it's funny. But I think it's a very, like, niche group of my friends. Well, niche group of people who all end up being my friends who think it's really funny when I'm lonely. And they just laugh at me when I'm crying alone in my room in my corner. But I don't know if that's, like, really good podcast substance. So we're trying not to do too much pitying. Pity bait. But what the fuck was that? Yeah, the transition that I was trying to do was that I'm lonely. You're lonely. If you're listening to this podcast on Christmas and you're lonely, I mean, I'm going to do this podcast segment for you. Because Suede really fucking loves Christmas. And I prepared to like have so much fun about Christmas on this episode. I know I've been a bit of a Scrooge. I've been hating on Christmas. It's not that I hate on Christmas. I always enjoy Christmas. I just dislike talking about Christmas 4 or 5 months earlier or even 3 weeks earlier. It's like the whole December has to be about fucking Christmas. There's great things about December that's not about Christmas. Like, I don't know. God damn it. Am I losing here? No, I can't fucking lose. For example, the 14th of December, there's 14 days in December. That's pretty cool. So while I know there are Scrooges out in the world, I also know that some people do have miserable times at Christmas. Let's be fucking fair. If you're the type of person who's having a miserable time on Christmas because you're a fucking orphan and your goddamn parents are dead and you're like a party animal and all your fucking friends are too busy partying with their parents because they need to do Christmas duties, so that's why you're fucking lonely, get the fuck out of here. You're not even the same species as me. What the fuck is wrong with you? This is more directed to like people who are celebrating Christmas alone, always, by themselves, because they're in a new city, they have social anxiety, they can't find the right friends, their friends are out of town, I don't know, something like that. And I've experienced a bunch of Christmases like that. And since without Suede yelling at me for not being excited enough about Christmas, I'm not going to be able to feign fucking excitement. I'm just going to be honest and explain that some of the greatest Christmas days I've ever had are actually pretty lonely days that I have managed to reflect back on and enjoy as stories, but also there were some times that some of these lonely events were generally pretty fucking fun. But just, you're not alone. There's like probably more than 60% of people outside who are fucking alone on Christmas. I guarantee the majority of people on Christmas Day are alone, and it's a quiet minority. It's one of those things that overcomes all the lonely voices on Christmas. I've told most of my Christmas stories on this podcast already because motherfucking Suede always wants to talk about Christmas, so I have to talk about Christmas, even the fucking summer, which makes me run out of Christmas stories, right? We don't have that many podcasts, but we've been talking about Christmas probably like 80% of the goddamn podcast is just Batman of fucking Christmas. But from my experience, don't force yourself to another fucking family. All my worst Christmases were the ones that I felt lonely and was like, I need to hang out with other people because otherwise I'm a fucking pathetic loser. Nah, you're just gonna feel more alienated and more isolated in like a family that you're not comfortable in. If you can't masturbate in the bed you're sleeping in, don't fucking go there. That is not the place you want to celebrate Christmas, all right? Guarantee you, you'd rather fucking just take a dingy ass motel and just masturbate in there. But you don't have to masturbate. The best Christmases are the ones you make a goal for yourself. And I don't mean like, gotta do 10 push-ups or gotta, I don't know, walk 3 flights of stairs so I lose 60 pounds. Not that type of goal. I just mean the goals where you set aside a 10-hour long film and you tell yourself, I'm gonna fucking watch this today. That's what you fucking do. Watch that fucking goddamn Bellatar film that you put aside because you didn't want to watch it. Watch a Wong Bing fucking documentary. I think that's his name. Look, you can even pick something incredibly sad. Like, fucking Wiseman's Near Death is a perfect fucking great movie to watch on Christmas. I get it. It's a little scary. You're watching people nearly dying. Well, actually, they're dying because it's a film about people who are terminally ill. But that is your choice, so it's not really that bad. Being depressed on Christmas for your choice is actually a positive and makes you incredibly happy. It's like a counterintuitive type of thing. I think I would recommend not playing too many video games or watching too many too comfy episodic TV shows. The issue with that type of stuff is that the achievement, accomplishment of, oh, I fucking completed this, or oh, I had a happy moment kind of feel, or I had a happy moment of like achievement and success, enjoyment, happens too often, right? So if you're watching Parks and Rec, every single fucking laugh you make and every single end of the episode gives you that comfy feeling, you're like feeling super fucking good. But then you kind of forget which one's the most important one. Same thing with video games. You're either struggling too hard on one boss for an hour, so you have like 50 minutes of depression for that elite elation of that boss just to have to head into another fucking hour of a struggle fest, or it's too easy and you can't fucking differentiate which great achievement is the one that's the best. It's just really obvious in films where the sort of high point comes. You get this sort of clear arc, so your day isn't too binged up with just highs. there's a challenge before you get your treat. It's the same thing about like saving a piece of candy or eating 60 pieces of candy that someone just dumps in your face. Both are fucking amazing, but you don't want the 60 pieces on Christmas if you're lonely, because the 60 pieces is not going to make you feel better. A good long TV show is probably good for that too. I mean, let me be fucking fair. My best fucking Christmas, which I've told on this podcast, is when I watched Shirobako. So just to be clear, Shirobako is an anime, and it's about this young girl who, she has a group of high school friends, and they love fucking anime, and they want to all make anime together. She's the only one who gets like really far in a job, so she's a, I don't know what it's called, a production assistant, a person who goes around making sure people do their jobs in the anime industry. It's a super comfy anime, super slice of life. It is luckily not episodic, so the sort of high points of the fucking anime don't just happen in every single episode, so everything gets collided and you forget. So let me set this up. I was left alone in a house with everyone going back home for Christmas, because they gotta see their families. Their families miss them. They love them. So I stayed in the apartment that was empty. My boss begged me to work on Christmas Eve. Makes sense. Christmas Eve is a busy fucking day. And guess what? My colleague peers, they were all working too. So not working. They were all working with their families. You know what I mean? I ended up going to work. Working on Christmas is probably not the thing you want to do. Even if working is your fucking passion, take the day off, go home, do a goal, watch a movie. Watch something 10 hours long. That is way better use of your time than sitting and making money. Unless you're broke and you really are starving and need to feed your kid and the system has failed you. I'm sorry for you motherfuckers. The one thing I do feel was incredibly annoying about these guests is that a lot of times their last fucking minute kind of shit was like Christmas stuff. And it was always Christmas silverware. So you had to wrap everything in paper. I never understood that. Like, what? Does paper actually prevent these fucking dishes from breaking if they like clang, clang, clang to each other? Like, I feel like these dishes are made by elves, right? So they have some magic resistance built into them already. So why the fuck does extra paper make them like not break? It doesn't make any fucking sense to me. If someone knows, tell us on fucking Twitter. It fucking confuses me. But on Christmas Day, I already know what the fuck I'm doing. At this time, I haven't seen anime in like maybe 20, no, not 20. I'm not even that fucking old. In like 2 years or something, because it's not that I thought I was too cool for anime, but it's not easy to watch anime in college unless you have anime friends. It wasn't easy for me to watch movies in college unless I had film friends too, so. You just, fucking college people, man. They're just fucking normies. They make you watch fucking Parks and Rec all the fucking time. You just gotta sit there and watch Parks and Rec. Fucking Parks and Rec. Don't watch Parks and Rec. But yeah, so Shirobako, I'm an alcoholic, but you know, I can still differentiate a bad alcoholic day and a good alcoholic day. I start drinking right when I get up and I put Shirobako on. And I think I order a pizza knowing that I'm going to be fucking annoyed about figuring out how to eat while I'm watching Shirobako and drunk. I generally fucking loved every single fucking minute of it. And the greatest thing about anime too is that the theme song gets better the more you love the anime, and the drunker you are, it also becomes better. Why Shirobako works, despite it being like a slightly episodic comfy anime, is that this fucking show is about a girl whose whole point of her fucking entire life is not to be enthusiastic about herself. It's about being enthusiastic about other people's ideas so they get enthusiastic or remotivated. There's some really good fucking moments where her enthusiasm and passion really changes some motherfuckers who are stubborn that their own ideas are shit. And it's fucking magical. At least it was magical to me. Maybe like the second theme song came on. It was super fucking good. Goddamn, it started snowing. I walked outside and I fucking yelled, "I love anime!" Pretty crazy shit. But the good thing was, it was Christmas. So I think my apartment complex, which was close to a university, probably didn't have that many families, which meant I was probably just yelling to myself, God in the snow and fucking Shirobako. Great fucking Christmas. You can't fucking beat it. And if you think you have a better Christmas than that, go ahead and drop it on Twitter. Prove me wrong. And prove Suede wrong that me constantly begging for fucking engagements on the podcast is a terrible idea. I think, no, fuck the argument. I don't know what the argument was. He thinks it's a terrible idea. I think it's a great idea. But we beckon to him his fucking dictator fucking hands.
Okay.
So to respect Suede's love for Christmas, we shall do some things that he loves about Christmas. And this is what we set up before. We were going to look into some directors that we thought were the most Christmas things. I bet that didn't make any sense. Guess what? This fucking game does not make any sense. And it's probably going to be complete utter garbage with me doing it solo, because we're supposed to be, you know, as Suede has pointed out, I'm very unfunny. Which means the only reason why people laugh on this podcast is because people yell at me. The only use that I have on this podcast is for people to yell at me. If I'm talking to myself, I'm not going to be fucking yelling at myself. That's kind of hard to do and a little schizophrenic. And I have issues, but I'm not really there yet. But that's okay. You're still with me. I'm not alone. And I have my little degens to support me. Thank you. Thank you. Merry Christmas. Let's get into the part of me talking about which director is the most something of Christmas. So the first thing we're arguing about is which director is the most Christmas tree director. I picked that I think is the most Christmas tree is Naomi Kawase. You know, actually, this bit might work because I bet I picked all these directors that Suede doesn't give a flying fuck about. Now the bit isn't just going to be like, what? Who? Anyways, so Christmas trees are pretty small and they sort of draw the central attention of a room, right? Like you put a Christmas tree in the room and everyone starts staring at that Christmas tree. I mean, the kids stare at the fucking presents. You know, it's part of the Christmas tree. I don't know. Maybe I'm a negative fucking Scrooge, but Christmas trees also are heavy to carry. They carry a burden of work and like, I get the presents are great, but it's kind of like the history of picking out a capitalist gift just for your fucking kids to be brainwashed by capitalism. Anyways, I think Kawase's films kind of work there. Like, hear me out. Her films are usually very small, but they're very beautiful. And there's a very sort of subtle theme that tracks the sort of central attention, puts the mood in. Yeah, actually, that's a better way to put it. Christmas trees don't absorb the central of attention. They sort of dictate the mood of the room. So instead of saying like, oh, everyone's attracted to the Christmas tree is undeniably the dictator of the room, kind of like Suede of this fucking podcast. I am undeniably under his fucking wrath of hands, and if I do one fucking mistake, I'm canceled. Naomi's work always feels like there's these themes that are very subtle that you can't really name or immediately point out what exactly the emotional tone is, but it almost dictates the whole film. And that kind of creates that sort of comfy and depressing feeling. And because I think Christmas is a little depressing, I think a good Christmas is a little depressing. Christmas tree is a big part of that, which makes Naomi's work like very important to that. Plus, I think Christmas tree directors should smell good because Christmas trees smell good. I haven't met Naomi Kawase. Someone who's met her tell me she doesn't smell good. She looks like someone who smells very, very good. The next thing we were going to debate on, which we're not debating on again because it's just me, who is the most Santa Claus director? Asian bias, but I think Hayao Miyazaki is pretty fucking good pick here. Just look at that goddamn hate facial hair, right? He is basically Asian Santa Claus. To be bringing that up, actually, in Hong Kong there are Asian Santa Clauses around, but goddamn, I think the city sometimes tries way too hard to have too many white Santa Clauses in the city. Can we fucking stop being so whitewashed, Hong Kong? Wake the fuck up. But it's okay. I love this city. Love Christmas. Anyways, his films are for good children, and Santa Claus is for children. I mean, his presents are his movies, right? There's like magic in them. There's beauty or whatever. Flying animals and robots and flying ships. That's so fucking elvish toys that Christmas Santa guy does. Oh, yeah, actually, great point then. His animators, they're like his elves. He has a bunch of little Japanese animators who are just pointy-eared leprechaun-looking things. Miyazaki is the Santa Claus director. So lastly, we're thinking about who was the most gingerbread director. Gingerbreads, big deal in Christmas. I guess a gingerbread cookie, right? Because a gingerbread is something different. Gingerbread is more healthy. And who even eats? Do people actually eat gingerbread cookies? Okay, actually, what the fuck is a gingerbread cookie? If you know, tweet at me. Like, does it have ginger in it? Is it even bread? Why is it bread? Are cookies bread? This is actually something I wish Suede was here for. The more I'm thinking about a gingerbread cookie, the more I think it's defying the gravities of what is food. Can we even eat them? Would eating a gingerbread cookie make me become fucking powerful? That's why Santa Claus must get his powers, right? So actually, what the real problem is, I don't know anything about gingerbread cookies. I think I've had like one in my life, and I don't really understand what defines as one parameters. What I think they do have are buttons. The gingerbread man cookie, he has buttons on him. So I was like looking at myself and thinking about what button do I have on me? And that's my mole. And we've talked on the podcast. I have a mole soul sister. So the gingerbread director has to be Maddie Diop. And like, hey, is it too perverted if I say I want to eat her up? Yeah, okay. Help. See, this doesn't fucking work when I don't have someone yell back at me. Talking to myself for 30 minutes. Well, I'm not talking to myself. I apologize. I'm talking to you guys. So talking to you guys for like 30 minutes is destroying my fucking throat. I did not realize how little I actually talk when I let Suede talk the whole time. Initially, we're thinking about bringing Fitzwillie, this comedy film, one of those Christmas movies that don't understand why the fuck we're calling it a Christmas movie besides one fucking scene that it takes place in Christmas. I wouldn't have enough to say about that film. I'm sorry, guys. I could argue about that film. I could yell at about that film, but like, who am I yelling to? There's no one who's going to respond to me. You're just going to hear me be like, I don't understand the heist that happened in this film. I don't understand why children have to sing Christmas carols. I don't understand why the main character looks like Velma. So instead, I decided to bring a film that I knew Suede would be incapable of watching. That's three types of films, basically. Very old films, very long films, and very avant-garde films. We're going to do avant-garde film William Basinski's Disintegration Loop 1.1. Yeah, a sad film in a lot of ways. This is a sad Christmas. This is a lonely Christmas, but we're going to make lonely sexy. That's our new law here. The lonely is the new sexy. Basically, this film is this one long shot of the aftermath of the 9/11 incident in the USA, right? Which makes some of my initial comments about orphans probably not so appropriate. There's a ton of black smoke that flies into the sky for about an hour, 10 minutes. Then there's this music loop that happens in the background, or as you can say, the OST. And it's like not longer than maybe 6 minutes. Not 6 minutes, sorry. A 6-second music loop plays throughout the whole film. This film is 100% a music project and a film project at the same time. As I said, this movie is called 1.1. I think there's like 10 of these, but I think only 1.1 uses a consistent footage or like a canon video footage. Let's go through this music project side first. Basically, why this film is looping a same 6-second, phrase of music is because Basinski, he discovered his old music tapes that he used to compose, and a lot of them were disintegrating, you know, like the movie title. When he played one, he realized they would deteriorate more, and he thought that sound was pretty sick and pretty cool. So he kept putting one of them on loop until it would disintegrate and deteriorate until it became this super big crackling, pausing, breaking kind of sound effect on this 6-second track. So yeah, the first 6 seconds you hear are like this good version of it. No, not a good version, an average version. And then it drops into this below average version. Honestly, I think it's pretty fun to listen to, even without the video footage. Look, it's definitely avant-garde music, but if you want to give it a chance, go ahead. It's not the worst at all. So for the film side of this project, how do I put this? I don't lie too much on the podcast. I sometimes lie. I'll take it back. I don't lie. I sometimes exaggerate. I sometimes think something happened and then build it up too much to create a story, but it's actually not that insane. And then I realize afterwards when I really sit down with my memories that I fucking kind of exaggerated his story a little. So I mean, I lie on the podcast, but I try not to. I did not know this movie was about 9/11 when I was watching it. I am, however, arrogant enough to think that everything I noted for the film that I want to talk about for the podcast is still relevant. We'll see how that goes. I've already offended all the orphans. I actually think this is one of the easier still footage, non-cutting static shock movies to sit through. That's because of fucking cloud watching. You know, like puffy puffy anyo, let's go, fucking cute ass motherfucking clouds. Yeah, I don't know where that came from. I just need to get that out of my system. I apologize. Everyone loves cloud watching. This static shot, though, it's this one black cloud that covers the whole bottom of New York City. So you can't really see much of the buildings until it gets to nighttime. And this black smoke, it sort of cuts the screen in this one-third way up all the way to the top. Actually, maybe it's like a half. You know, like in science class when you have a rectangle and you try to like draw a line in the middle of it to create two right corner triangles? That line is this smoke. Math. So I get into this movie and I have no idea what I'm looking at because I don't know this is about 9/11. I do notice that the black smoke is very contrasted to the sunset. I'm constantly looking around and I see maybe some birds. Now I think about it, might be planes. Oops. People walking on the bottom. But it's so dark that it's so hard to even see the people. And then it fucking clicks. You notice the black smoke right away, but you don't notice that the black smoke sort of acts as this cloud watching visual addiction. And suddenly it's, I don't know, entertaining. You start seeing these shapes and it's like beyond insane. And you're actually cloud watching because clouds are so fucking weird. I don't know, like when you pay attention to a cloud's edges, it feels like sometimes they're reaching, but sometimes it feels like they're spilling into the sky. It reminds me a lot of like those modern art museum exhibitions where a painter just takes a paint can and pours it onto a water. And then you just see the edges of the paint and the water sort of like combat. See, the water and the sky are always the weak stuff here. They don't fight back. They are either reached into or spilled into. They don't spill into the paint or reach into the paint. The same way with the clouds in the sky. But the greatest thing about fucking clouds is that they morph too. They like fucking change into different shapes. We've all cloud watched, so we know animals, faces. It's so fucking entertaining just looking at all these clouds, smoke, I mean. And it's beautiful. I don't know what else to say. I guess it's not beautiful in the same way everyone is calling Avatar The Way of Water is beautiful. See, I know how to talk about relevant mainstream movies, guys. What's that dude from fucking YouTube you zoomers like so much? Shall we? Cheers, my friend. Faded than a hoe. And I don't think the reason why I found it beautiful is because I didn't know it was about 9/11. Because I did recognize there was something quite sad about this movie. Even if I didn't know it was from planes crashing, the smoke was black. And the one loop soundtrack is super sad. I actually thought this was an environmental film, something about like coal miners. And I was thinking, wow, this is so interesting that they're making this toxin smoke come out from these coal mines that are so pretty and so fun and so entertaining. Entertaining is not actually my favorite word. I do like the word fun more here because it really is like super fun to watch these black smoke come into society. I want to talk about the moment where suddenly you are out of it and you don't actually know why. Oh, okay. Maybe if you know about this movie, you would. But yeah, I did not know anything about this movie. I did not even know about the music project either. I just suddenly lost all interest in looking at these clouds and I was super tired. And I thought the music had gotten softer. The music did change. I just didn't realize it and I was taken out. But it wasn't just that because it was starting to get harder and harder to see the clouds because it was becoming nighttime. And I didn't fucking realize that either. I didn't even realize the sun was setting because I was so concentrated on these goddamn clouds. And then it's dark. The last loop is like crackling. It's barely alive. And the film ends. I guess it ends like Christmas. Black, void, and empty. Merry Christmas. I also want to talk about some of the shapes that these clouds had that I experienced. One of the weird things about cloud watching, though, I don't know if everyone feels this way, but besides the fact that the shapes change, there's almost this emotional change that goes with it. How do I put it? You know, you can see a picture where someone frowns and you like recognize it's a frown, but your whole life doesn't frown with it. And then sometimes you see someone come up to you, can't see their face very well, and you realize it's a frown, and suddenly your whole consciousness, your whole understanding of the world seems to frown into their frown. Maybe it's just tone. Maybe I'm using too many words to just describe tone. It's like everything around you feels the frown itself. The tone becomes a frown. And I think clouds feel that way. It's super fucking weird. When you feel a cloud frown, it feels like you're frowning into the shape, rather than you recognize the cloud is frowning and you give it distance and say goodbye. I'm so happy. And because this smoke is fucking black, a lot of the fucking shapes are not going to be the most positive shapes that you see, unless you're a very positive person. Here, let me word it this way too. It almost feels like these emotions are intentional, but they're not intentional from your brain. The world is intentional about these emotions, and your brain can't help but receive. Let me go through some fucking examples, and we can, like, this will be like a fucking learning course of how to observe clouds, I guess. So fucking everyone needs this. Hold your fucking horses, or whatever the term is. All right, one of the things I saw was a bear eating a lion and then smooching it. Then it turned into an angry giant who watched the clouds below with power. When this bear starts eating the lion, I felt this bear start lunging. You feel that lunge. And suddenly, it reaches the lion, and your whole brain shifts into this weird space where you're like, wait a second. It's not eating the lion, and it's not powerful, and it's not going there with force. Instead, it's a lovely couple that they're super in love with. Instead, it's this big smooch of friendship and kinship. And you feel that power change into that smooching. And then when it turns into that angry giant again, you start feeling the power come back. Then another example is I saw this giant lizard who turned into a dog and then dunks his face into the clouds. The giant lizard comes up. It's like curious, caution, careful, and you feel all three emotions so strong. And then when it turns into that dog, it just becomes playful and then fucking puts its head in the clouds. All those three initial emotions just get released into whatever the fuck is fading away. The emotions almost feel like a spiral. When you feel that giant lizard turning into the dog, it sort of turns as a spiral and your emotions sort of loop in as a spiral into the fucking goddamn dog. It's like super fucking weird. I don't know. Maybe I can't really explain this. Maybe actions have emotions. Well, okay, they don't. At least we can't understand actions with emotions. But what if they did? That is exactly what I'm talking about. The sort of visuals you see in the clouds, it's not really the cloud that gives you an emotion. It's the morphing, the action. I think that's why for me, it feels kind of like a spiral, because I feel my emotions going through the sort of morphing. It feels like I am not in control of my emotions, but the cloud's actions are sort of dragging my emotions. So I have to follow the cloud emotionally. All these shapes that I talked about were like happy shapes. There's goals, there's beasts, some very scary faces in those black clouds, guys. Monsters with eyeballs popping out. There was this monster who even had sunglasses on. And what makes it super fun is that they're super artistically different too. Sometimes the monsters look anime. Sometimes they look Pixar. Sometimes they look gothic. It's different from going into a museum and getting enamored by beauty and feeling a picture or a painting and being like, wow, that's so fucking beautiful. Because clouds are constantly changing. So the type of beauty and fascination and visual, I don't know, enthusiasm, visual enjoyment, visual appetite you're getting, all of it is changing on the fly. If a painting makes you sad, it makes you sad. If a painting makes you happy, it makes you happy. But imagine those two intensity emotions constantly switching from one or the other. Cloud watching is basically constantly oscillating between two emotions of beauty that are overwhelming. The sort of oscillating feeling where your emotions are going back and forth, incredibly fun, incredibly entertaining, super underrated. Wish I could get my emotions played with like that more and more in the future. Please, guys, I'm fucking telling you, this movie is very fun. So it was enough for me to be like, what the fuck is a cloud? Why do clouds make you think like this? And why do clouds make your emotions turn in fucking correlation to exactly what the mood is? I had to do some research, right? Like, what the fuck do clouds do to make my brain go so fucking insane? In fact, this section might just me be insane. If no one else feels this way about clouds, I apologize. It makes sense. I did say I have to become a little schizophrenic to complete a solo podcast, and I am getting to this point. So I was looking at Wikipedia and trying to figure out what a cloud was. I could just read this out, which I guess I will do, because these are all words that I do not know the meaning of. A cloud is an aerosol consisting of a visible mass of miniature liquid droplets, frozen crystals, or other particles suspended in the atmosphere of a planetary body or similar space. What the fuck did I just read? This podcast needs a fucking cute meteorologist VTuber so she can explain this fucking bullshit to me. I also found out, so this is why I was like editing myself throughout the speaking earlier. Clouds and smoke are not even fucking the same thing. What the fuck? Are you kidding me? That's insane. But I gave up. It took me about like 3 seconds of reading that shit and I did not care anymore. Instead, what I actually care was why these shapes come into your brain. Why do you think these kind of shapes? And what I have realized is that there is a term for this, which I do not know how to pronounce, and I wish Suede was here so he could help me. It is called pareidolia. It means something like you search for memories every single time you see something to try to get your brain to connect exactly what something is. So I'm guessing we do this with everything. Even if you see a water bottle and you immediately recognize it's a water bottle, it's not because you recognize it's a water bottle. It's because your brain went through your fucking brain to figure out, oh, there's a water bottle that looks like this. Therefore, this might be a water bottle. What also got me too is that I saw a lot of faces in that fucking clouds of that fucking smoke in me that I don't think I've seen anywhere else in my life. Like, where are my memories coming from? Are clouds reflecting these hidden fucking memories I've never known I had? Or am I being fucking brainwashed by government because they're trying to erase these memories and the clouds are the only thing that are letting my fucking memories show up so I know I'm in trouble? Food for thought. I can already hear Suede yelling at me. He's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Everything you said sounds so fucking boring. Why don't you just go to the mountains and look at the fucking clouds? Why are you cloud watching in a goddamn fucking movie? I don't think this movie is better than fucking going to the mountains and watching clouds. If you want to fucking not watch this movie and go to the picnic and watch your goddamn fucking clouds, I'm not here judging you. I don't have many opportunities to watch clouds. To be honest, the only times I ever watch clouds is on the fucking airplane. And what is that? 5 minutes? And then you're out in the sky and you want to watch something else. You're bored. You're done. The reason why I'm engaging in this again, though, is because I personally probably don't exactly know entirely why. How to answer Suede's point about, oh, just go to the fucking mountains and watch clouds. So the more I talk through this, the more I hope to get closer to it. It's my leotard way. Chunibyo. I wonder if there's a French way to say Chunibyo properly. That way I can use Chunibyo whenever I reference one of those French academics or French directors. In a cute kawaii way. So let's say kawaii would be oh ho ho kawaii. Fuck it, I can't do a French accent. I need fucking Suede for that. I think why this movie feels so different from watching clouds in the fucking sky is the focus. It's just the focus is fucking different. So yeah, there's two types of different focus problems here. When you're outside, your focus is on your consciousness, your story, what you want to see. There's no way you can do this with this movie. No matter what type of shapes you make in your brain, you know this movie is fucking sad. Going out, it's freedom. You're prepped, you're out, you're looking at the sky, and the fucking narrative is yours. Wow, a Viking destroying a curtain, and the curtain monster is blowing its nose, and the blowing its nose is so fucking powerful, the Viking is about to lose, but then it fades away, and you're like, God damn, that was such an exciting story. I'm so fucking happy. I'm gonna do this again. Oh shit, look, a fucking person taking their fingernail and keeping it for fucking love. Whoa! that's not an Armie Hammer fucking reference. Thanks to Celine's goddamn fucking Twitter, I now know Armie Hammer ate fingernails as a cannibal in a sort of sexual way. So it was sexual abuse. I can't do justice to that story. I just found out about that story like last week. So look it up, figure it out yourself. I was actually referencing more to A Fugitive from the Past by Tomu Uchida. There's a character in there. She's a prostitute, and for 10 years, she keeps the main character's fingernail in her newspaper purse and plays with it whenever she misses him. There's also the type of focus of prep. I am going to go out and watch clouds outside in any fucking occasion. I'm putting on shoes. I'm putting on clothes, especially in this fucking winter. I'm putting on a jacket. I'm making sure I'm not eating curry for lunch so it doesn't like drool over my shirt. I can watch this movie in my fucking socks with that fucking curry drooling all over myself. And I can do it in bed and then wash the sheets later. You know what else I can do? I can take a fucking spoon of curry and rub it on my fucking nipples and go, wee-hee-hee, while I'm watching the fucking movie. I don't think watching this movie and concentrating is gonna get you more out of it than like seeing it in a museum where this is probably meant to be in. And in the background of a goddamn DJ set, which what all those fucking DJ set people are doing right now. Or like just put it on the background of your TV, your wallpaper. It's completely fine. It's good background music. But if you wanted to focus on it, there is something that's a little special too. I don't know. Is this film insensitive because it uses like death and 9/11 deaths to like make the film more sad than it is? Maybe, but as I explained before, I found this movie sad without knowing this was about 9/11 completely. I think the fact that the music is so like dying, even if you're not, you don't know what the project is about, you can still tell the music is getting worse or dying, basically. The black smoke, you don't know it's a black smoke of passing of lives, of death, but you do know it's black. It's just very hard to see black smoke being positive unless you're into that type of hot monster girl, black smoke girl. And monster girls being a positive, like purely a positive, is kind of questionable anyways. I don't know, something about the sunset too, it's just sad and tragic. Thematically, this movie is what you have to focus on. 9/11, lives are being lost. We have music tapes that are dying. They're being lost. We have this black smoke that is constantly producing figures in like cloud watching figures that are fading away. You can't retain that narrative. And everyone probably sees a different type of shape in the cloud too. This film embodies change and like disappearance. If this film did not exist, all three of these things would be gone. 9/11 as an event will always be remembered. But this actual action, the actual happening, I don't know how else to explain it except like the ing of a verb, right? The music is deteriorating. The smoke is rising away and people are literally dying. These are things that are literally disappearing in that moment. But it's been captured. It's been created into a project, insensitive or not insensitive. It's stamped as an art and you can find it in museums and on YouTube. It's been archived. This dynamic to me is very interesting in this movie, particular because there's almost this type of retaining a sense of bi-ness, like B-Y-E-ness. I don't know. Does that make sense? I guess it shouldn't really, though, because that's why this project is fascinating for me. It's doing something kind of illogical or something that shouldn't make much sense. It's retaining something that's not meant to be retained. I think there's like two types of energies going on. One to retain and one to say bye. And they work against each other, but somehow it works in this movie. And that's where I'll like come back to focus. Because I do think there are similar contradictions in our daily life. Like there's similar abstractions in our daily life. But I guess maybe I'm like too busy walking around in my boxers or not wanting to take the trash out or I don't want to do my dishes, so I'm more focused on that type of stuff. And I don't really have the time, the energy, the space to like sit down and think about that abstraction in my normal sort of routine. I don't think I ever try to like capture the moment of the disappearing. So I do have mementos, but mementos are different. Mementos are, it's this film, basically. It's the thing that points to the event of something that has been lost. But capturing the actual losing of itself and trying to retain that action, that I never try to do. And even though this film is a memento, the difference between this film as a memento compared to my mementos, per se, my very large wine bottle of Kung Fu Girl that I haven't thrown away because I drank it with someone I really liked who doesn't want to talk to me anymore. My bottle, it just points to that event, and it brings up memories of happiness and probably mostly sadness and loneliness, but it's fine, I'm fine. While this film doesn't just point, it tries to at least show. In a positive light, you could see this film as pointing to a possibility of being able to capture that sort of losing or ing action. In a utter understanding, you could see that even this movie is a failure and doesn't manage to do it. But I personally like to sit in that trying. And it's very hard for me to do that in my daily life unless I have something to reflect back to me. I literally witness the trying, and I can feel the attempt to try while I'm watching this movie. Maybe this film, in conclusion, we love conclusions, fucking book report right here. Maybe this film suggests that I should stop holding my goddamn fucking wine bottle and probably do the dishes. Unfortunately, I don't have access to our email account. That's something that Sway does. So if you send us an email this week, I apologize. I do not have an opportunity to thank you guys. Awkward. I guess instead I'm just going to read out some of our stats that we're doing. Okay. We have 22 five-star fucking ratings on Spotify. We also have 6 five-star ratings on Apple Podcasts. Pretty good, guys. But we could do a little better, and it hasn't increased for a while. So I would love to see that go up. It shouldn't be too hard. It's the holidays. Sit your parents, your friends, your family down, steal their account, take their phones, force it, give us the ratings. They don't even need to listen to it. If by next episode we hit... Goals make me scared. I don't know what a good goal is. If we hit 5 more ratings on any of our websites, so Apple Podcasts and Spotify, sorry, when I say any of our websites, I kind of mean just those two, because those are the only two I've been paying attention to. That'll be our goal. That's like, I don't know, what the fuck do people do? We could, the Slap Sway goal is something that we still have to figure out. Actually, I have an idea. If we get 5 ratings before the end of this month, so December 31st is the cutoff date, I will hold water into my mouth until I laugh for the beginning of the podcast. We probably need Suede to be on this podcast. Otherwise, I guess I could hold water in my mouth until I laugh. I would probably just end up laughing by myself. But it'd probably be better if someone can react to me spitting my water out in front of the camera. So if you want to hear me gurgle water on the podcast for as long as I can, go on Apple Podcasts, go on Spotify Podcasts, type in Fake Film Fans. You'll find us there. Give us 5 stars or any rating. 5 ratings. That's all we need. Because of recording and publishing kind of a timetable drama, you know, how when USA is 14 hours behind Hong Kong because it's an inferior country, that stuff will be happening too. So instead of the next episode, we'll confirm we got 5 ratings. The next episode will be the episode where I will cry when you guys don't give me 5 ratings, which sucks because I know the whole point of this podcast is listen to me cry, which means you guys are not going to give us 5 ratings, which means my begging right now is utterly pointless. I am not crying right now, guys. I'm not crying. I'm not lonely. I'm not crying. It's been a good fucking Christmas. You guys have a good fucking Christmas too. I'm super fucking happy that we were able to have this lonely Christmas time together. One, me, you, moi. Merry Christmas, my little DJs. And if you're gonna watch a movie, do it with the lights off.